From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall at cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 427 for this January the 13th, 2013. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. And we're broadcasting live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa and taking your calls very shortly at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is the long distance number. And I wanted to start off talking about the flu. And there's a couple of articles that have just come out that you might be interested in. One was from the Ottawa Citizen talking about what we already know, the flu season in Ottawa, and in fact, in the United States, it's an epidemic level. In Canada, it's much greater than it was the previous year. 8,000 confirmed cases of influenza A in Canada so far this season, and 250 cases of influenza B. By comparison, last year, 8,000 this year of influenza A, 275 last year at this time, and 50 cases of influenza B. So what the City of Ottawa Public Health Department has decided to do is open up their flu clinics again in order for you to access flu shots. It does take a couple of weeks to develop immunity from the flu vaccine, but nevertheless, the vaccine is an almost perfect match to the virus that is going around town. There have been 4 deaths and 40 hospitalizations this year in Ottawa as a result of the flu, and the hospitals are packed in the emergency rooms with people with the flu. And interestingly, the Citizen reported that 43% of the Ottawa hospital's 12,000 employees have not been vaccinated. This despite flu shot blitzes. And now staff are calling in with respiratory symptoms, even as patient loads have increased because of the outbreak. So I'd like to know what you think about that. If you think that when you go to a hospital, and you know that patients are going to be coming in with the flu, people are going to be going into the emergency room without the flu, but they may contract it from a healthcare worker that catches it from another patient because they haven't been vaccinated. Do you think that people in hospital, healthcare workers in the hospital, should be vaccinated, and should it be mandatory? I mean, here we have a situation where now staff are calling in sick, and granted that they're, no, we can't say it's all the flu. They could have colds or something else. But nevertheless, when you have a flu epidemic or you have such a dramatic increase in flu being spread throughout the city and hospitals bursting in the emergency rooms with people coming in with the flu, do you think that people who are working in the emergency department, who are working on the wards, who are cleaning the floors, who are doing all the things that they need to do to maintain the hospital and maintain cleanliness, do you think that they should be vaccinated in order to prevent further spread of disease around the hospital? So that's the first thing regarding the flu. The second is there is a study that has been released and published in the journal at the Annals of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, the December 2012 issue. And it is the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology that has come out with a statement on the basis of these studies that shows that children who have an egg allergy can be vaccinated with the flu vaccine, even though it's made in eggs. And the reason is that the amount of protein found in the flu vaccine is so small that it is not going to cause an allergic reaction in children who have egg allergies. So what in effect they're saying is that there's no reason to avoid giving a vaccination to a child who has an egg allergy, given that what we're seeing, and we see this all the time, but especially this year, and you see this even more so in the United States just because of the number of people, that the groups that are particularly affected quite severely by the flu are children under the age of 5 and adults over the age of 65. And that's what we're seeing in the hospitals now. So again, they're saying that on the basis of their evaluation, that there is very little risk to any of the children developing a severe allergic reaction to the egg protein because it is so tiny that is in the flu vaccine, And further, most of the reactions involve the skin and not the lungs. So they may get a little rash if they were to have an allergic reaction. And in fact, egg allergy is the most common food allergy in babies and young children with eczema. So that's something to keep in mind as well. And by age 16, about 70% of all children outgrow their egg allergy. So that's also some good news. So especially for adults who may have had an egg allergy or were diagnosed as children with an egg allergy, you may find that now you won't have that reaction. You can always get tested again to see. But if you've been avoiding the flu vaccine, not because you have anything specifically against it, but we're concerned about an allergic reaction, there doesn't seem to be that indication anymore to be concerned that way. And the other thing is actually something that I find very common. I'm finding also very much a treatment protocol for women, especially who are having very heavy periods where they end up anemic, losing a lot of iron. The bleeding can be heavy for 5 to 7 days. Can happen at any age. You see it more so towards late 30s, early 40s. And there's a study that just came out in the New England Journal of Medicine on January the 10th, funded by the National Institute for Health Research, that looked at the various treatments for what we call menorrhagia, which simply means heavy bleeding during your periods. And they wanted to find out what would be the best means of controlling the bleeding with the minimum amount of side effects and actually obviously the most efficacious. And so there were 571 women who consulted their family doctors for heavy menstrual bleeding, and they were randomly assigned to get either a levonorgestrel-releasing IUD, and it's commonly known in Canada as Mirena. It's the only one that's made, so we'll use that name. The Mirena IUD using mefenamic acid, which is a medication to reduce cramps and pain. Tranexamic acid, which is also used to reduce bleeding. And as well, combined estrogen and progesterone pills or progesterone only. And what was found is that the IUD was the most effective. It lasts for 5 years at a time, and it also had the best means of controlling bleeding with the minimum amount of side effects because there really wasn't much of a systemic effect. Women who had the IUD were not taking any hormone pills or any other medications that would circulate around their bloodstream. This rather releases a very tiny dose that remains in the uterine cavity that thins out the wall of the uterus in terms of the area that bleeds, called the endometrium, and provided them with tremendous relief. And they were more likely to be they were more likely to be compliant with this, given that it's just the IUD and it stays there. Usually within 2 years of taking medications, they found the medications weren't working very well or they had stopped treatment. So again, very interesting. It is something that I do in my office quite a bit and works very, very well. Relatively straightforward to do the procedure to insert the IUD, and does provide a much, much better quality of life. In fact, the women reported things on the basis of their quality of life and psychological, physical health, practical difficulties, social, family, and work life, their experience with this, and found this worked much, much better. So we're going to take a small break and get to your phone calls in just a few minutes. And before we leave, I heard this very amusing and interesting thing that all parents, I think, can appreciate.
I have, I thought I didn't want to be my dad, so I wrote down all the most famous parental sayings, everything that's really famous, you know, that parents say over and over again, and I wrote them down and I memorized them so that I could just say them to my children, and every day I get Austin and Adam in front of me, and I say all 50 of them, then let them go to their room and choose the one they think's most appropriate for the time. Let me try this. I think I can do this for you. There's all 50 of the most famous parental sayings. Let me do this in like 60 seconds. You better change your tune pretty quick or you're out of here. I mean it. Is that understood? Don't shake your head at me. I can't hear your head rattle. Don't mumble. You act as if the world owes you living. You got a chip on your shoulder. You're not going anywhere looking like that. You're crazy if you think you are. If you think you are, just try me. I don't know what's wrong with you. I never saw a kid like you. Other kids don't pull stuff like that. I wasn't like that. What kind of example do you think you are for your brothers and sisters? Sit up straight. Don't slouch. Would you like a spanking? If you'd like a spanking, just tell me now. We'll get this thing over with. You're cruising for a bruising. I'm your father as long as you live in my house. You'll do as I say do. You think the rules don't apply to you? I'm here to tell you that they do. Are you blind? mind. Watch what you're doing. You walk around here like you're in a daze. Something better change and change fast. You're driving your mother to an early grave. This is a family vacation. You're going to have fun whether you like it or not. Take some responsibility. Pull your own weight. Don't expect other people to pick up after you. And don't ask me for money. What do you think I'm made out of money? Think of a tree that grows money? You better wake up. And I don't mean maybe. Do you act like this when you're away from us? We've given you everything we possibly could. Food on the table, a roof over your head. Things you never had when we were your age. You treat us like we don't exist. That's no excuse. If he jumped off a cliff, would you jump off a cliff too? You're grounded. I'm not going to put up with this for another minute. You're crazy if you think I am. If you think I am, just try me. Don't look at me that way. Look at me when I'm talking to you. Don't make me say this again.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA.
And my wife's dieting now. That means we're all dieting. That's the rule. I got to sneak cookies in my house like I'm some kind of criminal. Go down in the basement with the boys and I'm handing them out to the kids. One of you will betray me. I'm not sure, but it will be the three-year-old Judas, I'm sure.
And back to your, we're going to get to your phone calls, 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And a good afternoon to Rena in Ottawa.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, Dr. Dworkin. My son, he's taking allergy treatment for peanuts.
Yes.
And since he started that treatment, I have noticed there's a big change in his behavior.
Uh-huh.
And I remember 10 years ago or 7 years ago, he was suffering from anxiety, and that's back again. And it's bad.
How old is he?
25.
Yeah, it's unlikely that the allergy shots are causing the anxiety. It's likely that he has an underlying anxiety disorder that is being triggered by likely other factors.
Mm-hmm. And because he's 25 and he doesn't have a family doctor. I went to see my family doctor and he doesn't think that is causing this anxiety. I explained all the consequences to him. And now I'm wondering if somebody can help me, recommending me a good counselor I can take to him. He's going to see my family physician.
Okay.
And I request him to advise some counseling.
Like a psychologist or something.
Yes,
like that?
Yeah. And yeah. Do you think, I need your advice on that.
Sure. I think that a lot of times what's very helpful for people who have anxiety-related disorders, that it's important to gain an understanding of the triggers that lead to the anxiety, the various factors within our environment, mm-hmm. in order to gain a measure of control over the anxiety. Now, granted that it may involve both counseling and treatment with medication, but that really is up to the evaluation that is done to really figure that out. But I can give you the name of somebody that I send my patients to so that they can get some what's known as cognitive behavioral therapy. There's both male and female psychologists that I tend to refer to a lot, and it depends on who he would be more comfortable with, but I can give you both names and you can then...
So which number I should call to contact you?
Well, actually, you won't have to. I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
And what we'll do is at the break, so don't hang up. And then once we get to the break, our producer will get in touch with you, just get back on the line and give you the names of both of those people.
Oh, I'll appreciate that because he's not sleeping at all and I'm a working woman. He's
right.
Not working. He has this stress also, not having a job, and he complains and bitch about all those things. And I tried to help him. I have a work. I can give you 10 hours, 20 hours work, which will keep him busy, and I'll pay you.
Mm-hmm.
But no, because of this problem, every time he'll say, yeah, mom, I'll sit with you. But no, nothing is working.
Yes, so he really, really does need some input from others that may be able to help him with controlling the anxiety.
The whole family tried. I am in bad shape now.
Yeah, well, the other thing too is family members can't be therapists.
That's
because
right.
you can't be objective. As much as you try to help,
yeah.
it's normal to feel emotionally wrapped up in it, and that's normal.
Another thing, he thinks did which he was not supposed to, and that is also causing anxiety, so many other things.
Right.
Combination of all things.
Yeah, so he needs someone to help him go through all these things and discuss them and find ways to solve some of the problems.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as I said, he may need something to help treat his anxiety, but usually the psychologist will be able to tell them, you know, okay, we can go this far with cognitive mm-hmm. therapy. You may need to have something to treat the anxiety to really complement each other in order to completely recover.
Okay, I'll appreciate Dr. Dwork, and I'll stay online
okay.
and wait for you, the phone number.
Sure.
Somebody can give it to me.
Well, you're very welcome, Rena, and all the best to you.
Thank you very
okay.
much. Thanks a lot, and have a great day. Nice talking to you.
Thank you. Nice talking to you, too.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
So I'll put Rena on hold, then we'll go over to line two, and Bob in Ottawa. Good afternoon. Hello, Bob. Bob, are you there? Well, I guess Bob is not there. And okay.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. I put it on mute.
Oh, you're on. That'll do it, Bob. Okay.
Thank you for sharing your knowledge and experience. This is fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Great to this. Anyways, I'm reading the book Eat to Live, which my family doctor asked me to do because he saw the pack of potatoes around my waist.
Okay.
And it's Joel Fuhrman. I gave the name of this to the producer.
Sure.
Have you heard of him?
Yes, I have.
And also, I read a book by Dr. Logan on brain diet years ago, and I have one anyways. And the diet of the Japanese was dramatically changed when the fast food people came in and the
yes.
anxiety and aggressiveness increased. And Dr. Logan, this guy, Eat to Live, cited a whole bunch of scientific studies that link the food we eat to disease. And the first chapter is titled, Digging Our Graves with Our Knives and Forks.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Bob. I have certainly nothing critical to say about that because it's something that I also firmly think is what is happening in our society based on the scientific evidence, that the production and increased production of processed foods has literally beaten the nutrient content out of the food that we eat.
Right.
It's high fat. People are gaining weight. You're seeing a lot of diseases associated with this kind of diet. And indeed, you do notice a lot of the diseases that were once the once seen only in North American or Western societies, now that they are being exported through fast food and processed foods to other countries, you're seeing a lot of the same changes occurring in those populations. So you're absolutely correct. It's just eating real food and staying away from processed foods will make a big, big difference. In fact, there's nothing magical about it. You know, we can read all kinds of books, but really it boils down to just a few things. Eating well, eating real food, getting regular exercise, not smoking, keeping your weight constant. I mean, that's pretty much all there is to it. And you'll find that for the most part, most people, if they follow that, will avoid a lot of chronic disease for many, many years.
Yeah, he did mention that we're wasting our money on cancer cures, in a sense, because a lot of it's caused by the food. But years ago, or decades ago, I think, somebody did a study, and they said that since we stopped, seedless this and seedless that, the incidence of cancer increased dramatically.
Well, you have to be careful about those kind of studies, though, because you have to have many studies to illustrate a trend. And a lot of the studies that we find, even in newspapers, you know, they'll have the food nutrient of the day, or eat this and you'll avoid a disease. And
right.
And I'm sure you know as well that it's a very complicated, our bodies are very complicated, and there's no one thing that will make a difference. It's a matter of a combination of the foods that we eat and all the things found within those foods that make a difference. In fact, there are three good books, and I interviewed Dr. Richard Béliveau on these books over the past few years. You know, he's written books called Foods That Fight Cancer, Cooking with Foods That Fight Cancer, and Eating Well, Living Well. And these are science-based books written for the public that review all the things that are found in foods and what the research and scientific evidence is for them. But in effect, what you gain from those books is understanding that everything has to work together. It's not a matter of eating raspberries or blueberries. It's a matter of eating all the different food groups that are real and not processed, as a means of maintaining your health.
Like red meat is not the best.
Well, again, as with anything else, you know, if someone is going to have red meat, it's always moderation. In fact, Dr. Béliveau also mentioned, you know, you're going to have, if you eat less than a 16 ounces of meat a week, it's not going to do much to you. But someone who's going to a fast food place and having burgers every day and consuming 2 or 3 pounds of meat, it's going to make a, it's going to cause a problem.
I don't know if this is a fair question, but years ago the medical profession and the chiropractic were at loggerheads. What is your thought on chiropractic?
Well, Bob, I just have to take a break, but I'll answer that question when we come back from the news.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. And we're going to take a small break for the news. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You are listening to Sunday House Call, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
580 CFRA Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com. The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment.
Because everyone knows cake's bad for us. Sometimes we try and disguise the fact we're eating cake. It's breakfast, I can't have cake. I'll have a muffin. You know the difference between a cake and a muffin? Nothing. A muffin is a bald cupcake. And we know it. Have you seen the mini muffins? How much denial are we in when we're eating mini muffins? Oh, I'm just going to have like 1 or 12. So small they don't really count. They're like muffin vitamins. When I eat them, I feel like an astronaut. That's why I have them for breakfast.
521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And we're just going to finish up our conversation with Bob. And you're asking about chiropractic, I think, Bob.
Yes.
Well, what I do is when I look for and try and develop an opinion about a particular procedure, or whether it's in medicine or any other area, I like to look at evidence. And so there's a website that I use, a few websites. One is called consumerlab.com, which is an independent body that looks at all treatments, you know, herbal treatments, vitamins, chiropractic, homeopathy, acupuncture, all these particular practices, as well as other websites that look at medical treatments to see whether they actually work or not. And in this case, with regards to chiropractic, there are different areas of chiropractic. So there are chiropractors, and we have one in our office who does active release therapy, which is actually very helpful for patients who are being treated for sports injuries and muscle injuries, back injuries and such. The issue of spinal manipulation, though, when you look at the evidence, and according to this website, and they cite all the studies, it's not very conclusive. There's very little to suggest that manipulating the spine will alter a person's health or improve their back, whereas active release therapy will definitely help. And when you look at where chiropractic was developed, it was Daniel David Palmer in 1895 who... And an experience that he had, he apparently believed it cured a man's deafness by manipulating his back. And he developed a college out of this, and his son took over and promoted this as a means of providing health care in that particular area. So when they look through the evidence, there's not much to show that it does very much with regards to spinal manipulation, whereas those that get their hands on and do techniques such as active release therapy, it does provide some benefit.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Bob.
Thank you for the humor.
Okay, you're very welcome.
A little bit of mine, when I go to the doctor next, I'm going to tell him that I'm cutting back on salt.
All right.
I love those salted chips, and before I eat them, I just lick the salt off.
Oh, that's just great, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Too much information. Thanks.
Hey,
bye.
Bye.
We're going to go to line 3 and speak to Dora in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin.
How are you?
Thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Great. So my question is about the consumption of diet Coca-Cola.
Right.
With caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
Caffeine-free, sorry.
Okay.
And like if one has kidney transplant, like there's a loss of phosphate. So if one has been advised to take more of the diet Coca-Cola, caffeine-free, compared to, like, I'm thinking of the aspartame in it.
Right.
And, like, compared to drinking that and taking phosphate supplements, which is better?
Well, first off, there's no evidence that aspartame causes any harm, especially in the amount that is found in a can of Coca-Cola. The European Food and Safety Agency and both the Food and Drug Administration and Health Canada have extensively reviewed the use of aspartame in diet drinks. And the theoretical, and this is the kicker to this, the theoretical maximum or the amount that you would have to drink in order to potentially cause some harm would be to drink 80 cans of pop every day for years in order to cause any problem. So if you're right. If you're going to have one can of Coke or two cans of Diet Coke that has aspartame in it, that's unlikely to cause any difficulties. And there's no reason to take any phosphate supplements or if, from drinking that pop. It's not going to cause any real disruption in that type of metabolism. The other issue is with regards to Diet Coke. There are two kinds, right? There's Diet Coke and there's Coke Zero, and Coke Zero has sucralose, which is a sugar molecule that just can't be absorbed. So really it's even closer to sugar and it's used weight per weight as sugar would be than aspartame, which is used in very tiny doses because it's very sweet and they're all sweeteners. And the sucralose has no calories in it. I tend to prefer that because I like to cook with it and prepare drinks with it because there's no calories in it and it gives still a lot of sweet flavor. But in effect, there's no danger in consuming these products as a means of cutting down your calories, provided that if you're using it as a means of reducing weight or a weight loss program, it's not something that's going to help you lose weight per se if you're going to eat more. So it's sort of cutting back on food, solid food, as a means of portion sizes to help reduce some of your calorie intake. But at the same time, removing the liquid calories that we tend to ignore that tend to contribute to our weight and weight problems.
Yes. But in this case, it's being used to boost the phosphate in the body because it lost the like.
Mm-hmm. Well, because of the contents that are in the soda.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing. Yeah. And again, it's the very tiny amounts that are in the soda. So you're not going to be infusing a lot of phosphate into your body by drinking one can of pop. So it's always a matter of the dosing. So again, if they recommended that you do that, they're obviously not concerned that it's going to do you any harm.
Okay.
So great. I hope that was helpful, Dora.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, you're very welcome. Yeah. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility. 1-800-580-2372 is our long distance number. And over to line 4 and Joan and Elmer. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I got the flu or the virus about 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a little longer. I went to my doctor, said nothing can be done about it. It's a virus.
Right.
Although my husband was giving me like Contact C and Tylenol, that seemed to help a little bit. I was really freezing, sweating,
yep.
et cetera. He said I was going to be not contagious anymore in 2 days, but to delay my trip south at least 2 more days
mm-hmm.
to be sure. So I went south in 4 days, and I had a nice week of rest and sun and good eating. And on the way back, my whatever seemed to stop getting lesser and pick up a little bit. So now I'm coughing,
mm-hmm.
and phlegm is coming up. That's the only signs I have. And I'm wondering if this virus could have morphed into a cold and if I should see a doctor about it and get some medicine.
Well, usually viruses don't morph from one to another. It's usually separate, discrete infections. So
okay, I might have picked up.
So you might have picked out, you likely have picked up something, especially with travel, likely picked up something from someone in your travels from down south to back up here.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's no fever, if there's no chills, you're otherwise functioning well, your appetite's good, you're not dehydrated, mm-hmm. then it's something just to wait and see. There's really not much that you can do to treat something like that other than symptomatic relief. But even then, it's good to try and stay away from all the medications if you don't need to take them.
Great. okay? And this, I was very interested in what was said about the drinking diet drinks.
Sure.
And I'm wondering, we recently read a diet book about, that said no diet drinks whatsoever and no ice and not even soda water, I guess, because they didn't want any of the bubbly stuff. Now, do you have any objection or any thoughts on drinking, like, soda water, for example?
No, it's only carbon dioxide and some water. That's all it is. So mm-hmm. there's certainly nothing wrong with that. There's no carbon dioxide is relatively inert when you drink it. And the rest is just water. And diet drinks, I'm not sure why they would be recommending against diet drinks per se.
They had every additive, no red meat because it has
right.
additives. This one was completely against, like, ice.
Yeah.
What's wrong with ice?
I know. The problem with diet books, and one of the issues with diet books, is that when you see that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of diet books on the market. And
yes.
And so if there was one diet book that was giving the right advice, you wouldn't have the need for all the thousands of them. So, and mm-hmm. most diets, right. and diet in and of itself is, diets don't usually work. Lifestyle changes, if you want to call a diet a lifestyle change, work if that person is happy with what they're doing, if they feel that they can maintain that change forever. And so those are the things that will contribute to a successful weight management program. But to use a book that recommends changes for several weeks or months and then sort of lets you go after that, all that happens is the person resumes their normal eating habits and essentially regains their weight. And we see that over and over again with different diet plans. The lifestyle changes that are effective are those where someone does not feel themselves to be on a diet. They're eating what they want. They're just eating less of it. They've taken into account where all the extra calories come in during the day or where they came in during the day that contributed to their weight gain. They've either eliminated them or modified them so that they've reduced those calories as well. And it's amazing how little it takes in order to gain weight over time, because most people don't gain 10 pounds in a month. Most people will gain 10 pounds in a year. And 10 pounds in a year is less than a pound a month. And if you consider that a pound is about 3,500 calories, mm-hmm. 3,500 calories, and yet they're doing less than a pound a month, so say 3,000 calories, that's about 300 extra calories a day. 300 extra calories a day is about, depending on what you consume, it's about a medium-size coffee extravaganza thing at Starbucks. It's three quarters of a small Blizzard Dairy Queen. It's about an extra sandwich a day. It can be four or five coffees that have cream and sugar in them. It could be literally an extra cup of milk, which has 250 calories or more. It could be a glass of orange juice, which has 250 calories. So it doesn't take much to gain that weight over the course of the year. And then when we consider holiday times and birthdays and such, those are a lot of extra calories that people add on that never go away. So that's sort of where things like that contribute to the weight gain. And so going on a diet, sure, it'll help you lose weight at first. But the problem is that doesn't follow the natural rhythm of that person's life. And so as a result, they get fed up and they just go back to what they were doing before.
Well, personally, I've gained 1 pound a year in 55 years of marriage.
Well, that's 55 years. Well, Jonah, thanks.
I think I lost a few over this sickness. But...
yeah, that does do that. Well, thanks for calling, Joan.
Okay, thank you, Doctor.
All the best.
Bye-bye. Very helpful. Bye-bye.
Fever. And we'll take a small break and come back to your calls. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. And again, back in just a few minutes.
580 CFRA Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
When you call my name and you know I'm going to treat you right, you give me fever.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA. I got a fever.
And back to the phone lines, and a good afternoon to David in Ottawa.
Hi there.
Hi.
I want to get a tiebreaker opinion from you.
Okay.
My former doctor told me that glucosamine sulfate does not mean sugar as in glucose. It's a root or whatever, cartilage kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I shouldn't refuse to take it because of being diabetic.
Okay.
But my friend's doctor says, you can't take that stuff. My doctor said I shouldn't because I'm diabetic. So do you want to cast a deciding vote for me?
Yeah, I can. And what I'll do is not just on opinion, but I'll give you the evidence.
Sure.
And the evidence is that when they did original animal studies, it raised concerns that glucosamine might increase blood sugar in people with diabetes. But then they did subsequent studies on people, and actually a whole host of them, and essentially it showed, no, it does not increase blood glucose. So the answer to the question is glucosamine will not raise glucose levels in diabetics.
Okay, now if that's about the sucraline, the artificial sweetener in the fasting. Now that's not a, you said it's a kind of a sugar derivative, but it doesn't, it's blocked from the system. Is that safe for diabetics?
In fact, yes, it is. It'll give you the same sweet flavor to foods, but it won't give you any calories. It's not absorbed.
I tried stevia and I didn't like it.
Yeah, I like the sucralose because it's literally a sugar molecule. The difference is that they've changed certain. They've actually substituted 3 chloride ions, same thing you find in salts for sodium chloride, but they put 3 chloride ions in this molecule and replaced the hydroxy groups. And in effect, what happens is you still get the same sweet flavor, except the body does not digest it. That is, it doesn't break it down and convert it into energy, so it has no calories.
That's so, great news. So thank you for both opinions, then.
You're very welcome, David.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Over to line 2, and a good afternoon to Anne-Marie in Canada.
Hello, Dr.
Hi.
Jordan. Hi. I personally think that the healthcare workers in hospitals should have to have the vaccine, but I also think all doctors should have to have it.
That was implied, yes.
Okay, and also within health clinics or doctors' offices, all of those persons need to have it. Now, as a retired registered nurse, when I was working within the hospital, I was opposed to being told I had to have it. I did not contract the flu by good luck, probably.
Right.
But also I was in a critical care area, so I wasn't exposed to an awful lot directly from patients.
Right.
However, time has passed and knowledge has become more available.
Mm-hmm.
And also, my health has changed.
Yes, it
has. So I have a better appreciation of where all the logic is coming from. And it really needs to be essential.
I happen to agree with you, Anne-Marie. It's to me, it's a no-brainer because you've got people that are going to a place that where they are already ill or they're having medical problems and they don't have to come into a place where their risk of contracting disease is even made more so by the fact that the people that are helping them now have the potential to spread the disease.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I don't think it's a complicated matter at all.
No, I don't. But I did feel that I need to say honestly that when I was working full-time, I was opposed. Mind you, it was just in the early stages of doing vaccines.
Right. But you said something very important, and that's what I find really nice to hear, is that it's nice when someone looks at the evidence and on the basis of that evidence says, you know, I think it's time to change my mind on this because the evidence that I'm looking at is telling me something that I had once believed to be false and now I see as actually true. And so that's Mark's a really good scientist, Anne-Marie.
Oh, thanks. No, well, you can't close your mind or you stop learning and then you may as well be dead. So,
that's absolutely right.
You know, a very quick comment. The gentleman asking about the glucosamine.
Yes.
I have been taking glucosamine sulfate. I take it for arthritic.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's working.
Right.
Whereas I'd had umpteen other prescribed medications that weren't doing anything. I can have the darn thing first thing in the morning and go in and have my fasting blood sugar done, and I have no elevation.
Right. And it's interesting, the glucosamine sulfate, it's interesting because when you look at the clinical studies for it, it's equivocal. That is, there are some studies that showed it didn't do much. For others, it may have benefited. There may be a subgroup of people for whom it works better versus others. But really there's no harm in taking it. And if it is working for you and it's controlling your pain, I think ultimately that's what's important. But it, as we've just talked about, it's very important to always look at what the evidence shows so that we're not recommending things for people for whom there's nothing to show that it actually is going to do something for them.
No, exactly.
And also, it still costs money. It may not be very much, but it's money that could be spent elsewhere in somebody's life, money being tight as it is for many people. You want your dollar to go as far as it can in terms of helping you, especially if you're spending money on medications or treatments. So I think if it's helping you, fantastic.
Well, it's not, as you say, it's not effective for everyone.
Right.
No one medication is.
No, that's very true.
For myself, 1 300 milligram once a day is what I do. Occasionally I get a flare up and I have, you know, pain in all different areas bothering you in the night or whatever.
Yep.
I'll do 2 tablets for a few times for about 3-4 days and then go back to 1. And right now, for myself, that's effective, but I think it's worth a try.
Yeah, it's certainly worth a try, and you're not taking a whole bunch of other stuff that could potentially cause harm. So I think that's terrific.
Okay, thank you. I really enjoy your show. Well, Always informative.
Thank you very much, Anne-Marie.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
My apologies to Michael in Ottawa who wanted to discuss spinal stenosis. I know you've been waiting a little bit of time, but we're really out of time. I can answer your question either this coming Wednesday on Rob Snow's show, Sunday afternoon at 3, or next Sunday. We'll be back here to answer your questions. My thanks to Ted Raymond for producing Sunday House Call. And as always, your calls, always interesting and informative, and I believe helpful for everybody. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You have been listening to Sunday House Call on 580 CFRA. Everyone have a great week.